And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre. Well, recently, President Joe Biden has proposed basically a climate plan, but it's called the American Jobs Plan, I believe. It's the thing you've heard about being a $2 trillion plan, which have spread over 8 years, but a $2 trillion plan to rebuild much of the infrastructure in the country. And the Biden plan touches on many things. It touches on broadband, replacing all the lead water pipes in the country, just great, great stuff. But a lot of the money is intended for sort of infrastructure, I would say old-fashioned infrastructure like bridges and roads and things. But there's a fair amount of money in the Biden $2 trillion plan that is directed at mass transit and transportation issues in general. So we've reached a point in the country where we're emerging, I hope to God, we're emerging from the pandemic. We're trying to redefine what normal is. What's the new normal in light of the demands of climate change, of the economic circumstances we find ourselves in? We have a lot of money coming down, presumably coming down from D.C., that could be spent to improve our situation. And the question is, what would you do with that kind of money? Well, to answer that question, we are pleased to be joined by Chris Dempsey, who is the director of the Transportation for Massachusetts Advocacy Coalition, which I believe is a group of organizations that all think about transportation matters. Chris, how are you doing?
Ted, I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me on.
Good. So tell me about Transportation for Massachusetts, the Advocacy Coalition, if I didn't get that quite right. But the question I want to pose to you is, did I describe the opportunity in front of us properly? And where do you think we ought to be headed if in reforming our transportation systems?
Yeah, thanks so much, Ted. So you did get T for Mass right. We are a coalition of more than 100 organizations around the Commonwealth that have a stake in making transportation work better. And we truly believe that with the right policies, we can make our transportation system more efficient, more equitable, more sustainable, more economically productive all at the same time. There's a real opportunity to have smarter policies, make smarter investments, and to end up with a transportation system that we're all proud of, and that is a way to build and create opportunity for people rather than to hold back our environment and our economy, which is what our transportation system does today. So the $2 trillion plan that President Biden and VP Harris have put forward is really exciting. And there's a lot in there, as you mentioned. There's about $600 million of that $2 trillion that is dedicated towards transportation. And what we're seeing in this plan is essentially for the first time ever, certainly for the first time at such a grand scale, the federal government saying that they want to support transit as much as they want to support roads. Typically, about 80% of all federal funding goes to roads and 20% goes to transit. And
it's
this
kind
doesn't
of the
quite
legacy of the Eisenhower era, right?
It's exactly right. You know, from I won't go into too much history, but from 1956, which is the beginning of the Eisenhower highway era, all the way to the early 1980s, 100% of those dollars that were generated from the gas tax just went to roads. And it became this sort of huge machine for just creating more vehicle miles traveled, more highway interchanges, more cars, more congestion, all of the things that we now realize were a mistake, or at least needed to be managed better than they were. In the 1980s, Congressman House Speaker Tip O'Neill actually struck a deal with President Reagan to say, hey, we actually in Massachusetts and in some other urban states, we want to spend more money on transit. And that was a direct result of the Stop the Highway movement of the 1960s and 1970s
really?
In Massachusetts. So it's a kind of a cool example of where activism in Massachusetts led to a change in national federal policy.
Now, is it ironic that the tunnel is the Tip O'Neill Tunnel?
I think it is in a lot of ways. I think
it's interesting.
Yeah. Although, you know, Tip O'Neill liked bringing big projects home. So maybe it's fitting in that sense. Anyway, 80-20 was sort of good enough in the early 80s when I was born. It's no longer good enough. And we want it to be 50-50 at least, and maybe even more weighted towards transit. And this plan, this proposal from President Biden starts to do that. Mm-hmm. So while there's $115 billion for roads and bridges, there's $165 billion for public transit and passenger and freight railways. 85 of that, about half of that is public transit. And that would mean roughly $3 billion of funding for Massachusetts over the 8-year period that the plan is proposed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That would be significant dollars, transformational in many ways, in that it would pivot the MBTA from a capital plan that right now they see dollars being very scarce and they have to really cut back on things, to at least being able to be more proactive and to start to think about what are the projects we want to do that we think could really advance the system. But I don't want to give people too much of an impression that this plan is going to revolutionize public transit in Massachusetts. $3 billion can go pretty quickly when you're talking about public transit projects. The Green Line extension is about $1 billion. The South Coast Rail project is about $1 billion. So you could do about 3 projects of that size in total for this funding. Mm-hmm. And you probably would have to do less in terms of expansion because you need some of those dollars for the basic maintenance of the system. Still, I don't want to be negative here. It's a great sign. We would love to see this passed. We're going to encourage our members of the congressional delegation to advance it. And we would want all your listeners to do the same thing, to send a message clearly to Congress and to the Senate saying, this is a good plan and we want you to vote yes on it.
And what I've heard, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the message I've picked up from the zeitgeist is that, yes, we like this plan. Please make it bigger. Right.
And yeah, absolutely. I mean, we could use it, and especially for transit. You know, I think there's good value you get there. Some of the investments that we make in transit can literally last 100 years or more in terms of providing benefit. The example I love to talk about here is that in the 1890s, the Massachusetts General Court, the legislature, wrote into the documents for the bond bill that they were passing to create the what was called the West Boston Bridge, we now know as the Longfellow Bridge. They wrote into that law that they wanted to build the bridge wider than they needed it to be because they had a hunch that this newfangled technology called the subway might want to go over the middle of that bridge. And they were willing to make an investment. The definition of an investment is I'm willing to pay more now or to give up something now to get more later. They did that. And the result of that is the Red Line, which connects Alewife all the way down to Dorchester and to Braintree. But, you know, so importantly, connects downtown Boston to Mass General Hospital, to Kendall Square, to Central Square, to Harvard Square. It connects people to jobs. It connects innovative companies to each other. And if we had not made that investment, the entire New England economy might look different if we had not done that. So transit can pay dividends for years and years and years to come. And we are so fortunate that 120 years ago, they made that decision. Let's make some of those same decisions today for the next 120 years.
So let me ask you this question then. Supposing instead of $3 billion, you had $30 billion. How would you change the system? I mean, let's say money's not the issue. What are the things you would want to spend money on to make public transportation in Massachusetts be as noble and as good as we hope it could be?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ted. I'm actually going to start maybe somewhat counterintuitively with the least expensive improvements that we can make, because I think some of those can be the most important. You know, I would spend some of that money and I'd go out and buy a bunch of buckets of paint at Home Depot and I'd start painting bus lanes all throughout the greater Boston area. It's a low-cost way to dramatically improve transit service. We've been so encouraged to see it happen on the Tobin Bridge, on the Boston-bound side of the Tobin Bridge, which now serves the 111 bus and a few other local and regional buses that go over the Tobin. On a busy day in the pre-pandemic time, something like 1/5 to 1/4 of all the human beings that were going over the Tobin Bridge were doing it in buses.
Really?
And yet buses were something like 1-2% of the vehicles.
Interesting.
So when you have that amount of efficiency in a system, you need to give those vehicles priority. And that's what bus lanes do. And they're really low cost. There's a political conversation that always needs to be had about a bus lane, because people don't necessarily like those changes. They don't like that maybe it means giving up some parking, or it means giving up a travel lane that they're used to driving in. But if our goal is to move more people more efficiently and with less of a climate impact, then we absolutely have to be talking about bus lanes. And so I'd start there. I'd start looking at other ways to improve bus service, certainly electrifying our bus fleet with battery electric buses, which are now common in other parts of the world and increasingly common in the U.S. There's no reason why Massachusetts shouldn't be a leader on that. Mm-hmm. That means building new bus maintenance facilities. And I don't mean to be too focused on the bus, but I raise it first because it's often the mode of transportation that gets the least amount of attention and the least amount of support. And I think we should be flipping that dynamic and giving it the most support because it can be so cost effective and drive so many improvements to equity in our transportation system.
Interesting. Gets the least love, but has the most payback for the dollar, right?
Yeah, I
agree
right.
with you. It's just interesting. So there's so many interesting topics. I want you to continue down the path of how you would spend money to more and more expensive. But you're just talking about the political conversation around streets, which is a whole other thing about how do we recapture streets for human communication, for walking and biking and whatnot, into a human scale city, right? And so please put that in your list of things, and then we'll come back to it as you...
Well, we can go to that next, Ted, because that's actually a great topic, and it's probably where I would spend my second bucket of money is on what are seemingly little things, but again, things that have enormous impacts for communities. And I think, you know, that's, in many ways, that's what Massachusetts is at its heart, is a collection of different communities. And we've got diverse communities, whether they're small towns, rural communities, or whether they're big cities. But they have this sort of shared bond and commonality. We don't do enough to advance complete streets, which means streets that are more oriented towards people that are walking or biking or taking transit than to people that are driving. We don't do enough to just do things like fix sidewalks in our communities, to paint crosswalks so that people feel safer crossing the street, to make those sort of local changes that allow people to have more access and more opportunity. I mean, there are people who live three blocks away from a grocery store, but they don't feel safe walking or biking there. And so maybe they don't get there at all, or maybe they drive there. And we want to be able to encourage those low impact forms of transportation and healthy forms of transportation when we can. So some of what I would do is just give mayors and select boards some money to say, hey, fix local sidewalks and improve your downtowns and your main streets so that they're more economically productive. We've started to see that. It's been one of the silver linings in a really terrible year for so many people, is seeing what Massachusetts has done, again, communities large and small and across the state, in transforming some of their public street space to more productive uses. In my community in Brookline, we have places where we once had a parking spot that might serve one car, maybe, you know, a couple people in that car, that now serves 12 or 15 people that are eating ice cream, or 8 people who are eating a dinner outside with a heated lamp. And not only is that a better use of space in terms of just community enjoyment, it's also actually generating a lot more tax revenue than what the parking meter generated when that was the status quo. Mm-hmm. So it's been wonderful to see. I'm often a critic of the Mass Department of Transportation, but one thing they've done very well is to develop these grant programs called the Shared Spaces and the Winter Spaces Program. And they're continuing to do that today. I think, in fact, just as your listeners are listening to this, they'll have heard some news about some new grants that are being issued. And it's a great place to spend money and to use these dollars. You can spread them all over the state and you can see benefit across the state because of that.
And it's a mind shift to talk about infrastructure and transit dollars being focused on the sidewalks, right? Because it allows other kinds of transit, I guess is the right word, that may not fit into your trucks and highways and cars kind of model of what infrastructure is. So I think it's an interesting point good. So now we've got buses running everywhere on complete streets where people can eat ice cream in the street. And what do you do?
So let's start to talk about some more costly, but also some really valuable projects. One thing I would do is spend more money on what's just called state of good repair, and then also modernization of the system that we have today. So let's make sure that every single regional transit authority bus is an electric bus. And let's also make sure that when they get back to the yard every night, that they've got a top-notch bus maintenance facility that's making sure that those buses are well taken care of, so they're not breaking down on riders as they're going about their route. Let's make sure that the stations that we have, whether it's Union Station in Springfield or whether it's Mattapan Station in Boston, that those stations are well lit, that they've got fresh paint on them, they've got places to sit, that they feel safe, that they've got coverings for people who are waiting out in the cold or in the snow. All of those things that are serving the ridership that we have today that deserves a better experience than the one that it gets. So state of good repair and modernization, you know, and then sort of finally at the top of that pyramid, I would go to the expansion projects. And those are the ones that tend to get the most attention. You know, hey, let's build this new rail line. Hey, let's build this new tunnel or this new
North-South link or something. Yeah.
Things like that. You know, many of those are really good projects, but it's easy to get fixated on them and to think of those as sort of the answer and the solution. And they are certainly the solution for some folks, but you often, when you look at the ridership numbers and the projections, you know, even if you're taking a pretty aggressive view on what those ridership numbers can be, you know, they serve a small fraction of the ridership that we have today. And so we need to be thinking about those trade-offs. Right. You know, what's the value of expanding? And I won't use specific names here because I don't want to get in trouble with anybody or in a fight with anybody. But, you know, what's the value of an extension of a new transit line to Gateway City, ABC, versus dramatically improving the bus service for the people that are already in Gateway City, ABC, tens of thousands of them who need that service to get to the grocery store, to get to their doctor's appointment, to get to school today, and don't have the service that they need to actually be a platform for opportunity.
And I think that, I mean, I guess broaching the conversation, though, is the first step, right? Which is what you're doing, like laying out those kinds of different choices, saying, okay, what do we all think? And that's a great conversation to have. Well, Chris, I'm glad we just spent $30 billion in about 15 minutes here. But I think what we've got to do is, unfortunately, I think we need to stop here. What I will do is I'll put up links to some of the stuff we talked about. Remind me again of the Transportation for Massachusetts website. How can people check up on the stuff you're doing?
So we're at t4ma.org. That's the number four, T, the number four, ma.org. And on Twitter, we are at T4Mass. And we'd love to connect with people and engage with folks.
Super. So we'll put links for that stuff up on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have a question or a suggestion about what topics we ought to be covering in this show, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we don't know. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, all the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to do the same thing on their smartphones. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Chris, thank you so much for being here.
Ted, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.